Hi, I'm Maeve Doyle, and you're listening to A Private View. Today, I'm coming to you from Soho, and I'm here with the artist known as Karma Causey. You probably heard about him before Christmas when he had a very big show, a big explosion onto the scene in Bethnal Green. And it was called, what was it called again?
Shit Show.
Yeah, good name for it. Now, there's so many things that are interesting about you. That show was interesting, but it's also quite fascinating that you have another career as an artist with your own name, with your own galleries, with your own sort of place in the art ecosystem. So this speaks to me about, I would say you're the kind of person who would want to live twice.
Love it. I mean, it's neither true or false. Yeah, I'm an artist. It's what I've always done. I was always known as the kid that can draw.
Yeah, you're the kid that could draw. So this is your early life.
Yeah, it's those impulsive expressions. But the reason why, you know, you might think that there's two lives involved, it's sort of, this isn't about me, this one.
Right. I do remember you saying this is about a voice, a collective voice, in a time when there's a lot of censorship.
For me, it's about turning the lens on an age-old movement that's yet to receive adequate recognition.
And the age-old movement
being toilet graffiti.
Yeah, writing on the bathroom wall.
Yeah. We all grew up with it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You tell the person you loved on the bathroom wall you love them.
For me, you know, what is it, 2024? It's the original form of social media.
It's guerrilla, too. I think that was impressive when I heard about how you started this. I don't know how the idea came, but I'm guessing that you probably are a fan of Marcel Duchamp. And I don't know why I think that. Maybe it's because of the toilet. I mean, obviously that. But it's also found art and looking for things around you that don't need to be made or produced or constructed.
I mean, yeah. Marcel Duchamp paved the way for the acceptance of challenging art. Of course, that plants a seed. I know my art history. It's all I've ever done. It's the only thing that's ever made sense to me. But this is just an idea that, you know, I've always found it quite romantic. I had the idea over 10 years ago and just sitting down, going into a pub toilet, sitting down, looking at the back of the door and just thinking, who was this person? This is the one thing they decided to leave. I think it says more about them than perhaps they'll ever know. So for me, it's a fascinating psychological study.
I mean, you did say at one point in the documentary that's been made about you that it was a frontier for free speech.
The final frontier for free speech.
Yeah. And I thought that was, I don't know what I thought that was. I thought that was quite unfortunate because everything's monitored and thought about and it has to happen because words are like weapons and they were being used in an incorrect way. But now not speaking doesn't mean that people still aren't thinking these things. So you're going back to freedom of speech. It's not easy to say what you want to say on your mind, but also keeping those things inside you can't be good for you. So where do we find the balance?
And I agree. So it can't be good for you to keep these things inside. But I also think the most important thing is that we're still hearing them. Like you can cancel someone overnight. I don't know if that's constructive. Maybe we should open up debate and give that person an opportunity to learn from different perspectives. I think that's the way that you can grow. But if you can just cancel someone, I don't know if it does any good.
A great conversation to be having. I'm going to go back to my scripted questions that you won't like, but I'm going to ask them of you anyway. So if you were to say who you are, Karma Causey, and what you do, how would you describe it? Because it sounds like activism to me, and I know you're an artist.
To be honest, it's just all about living authentically. Anything I do has to be in line with who I am.
Who are you?
I'm someone who's a unique thinker, and also not. I think I represent the everyday person. And in my practice as a painter, I celebrate the everyday person. You know, it's just part of the people that go unnoticed, and I think that's they're the people that really make up our society. So this is just a natural progression through Karma Causey.
I can understand that now that you've described it that way, because you're finding people's voices authentically on the bathroom wall while they're not being watched, while they have a moment of privacy where they may have had a drink or two. And they're saying what's on their mind.
Yeah, as I say, the final frontier of free speech is the only real place where you're behind a mask. These days, anything that you say, your name's attached to it. And that can be problematic because people can stop being themselves. Whereas in this private realm, where they're behind a mask, you know, everything left is an invitation to converse. And, you know, I've been to more pub toilets than most people.
I've read somewhere it was 250 toilets in 3 days.
I mean, that was then. So that was sort of, that was summer 2022. So now, you know, I've been to many more. And, you know, it's beautiful. I think, you know, particularly in the UK, because I've been international now, and particularly in the UK, I think there's a misconception as to our nation. Actually, most of the remarks you find are defiantly optimistic. And anyone that leaves something that's challenging and negative is jumped all over. And actually, it's a beautiful thing to witness. And I feel really privileged to have witnessed it in the way that I did. You know, it was a project. It was a passion thing. It wasn't about making money, but it was more about me being an observer of this tradition. And that's one of the takeaway key aspects, you know.
Yeah, you're asking us how culture is shaping up in 2024. Where are we at as a society? What do we stand for? What do we value? So the process is you visit the pub toilets, you photograph them, and you take the photographs back to the studio and work on them. And we're in front of three different paintings here, prints here.
Yeah, so look, I went to 250 pubs around London over the space of 5 days. That's harder work than you think it is. You imagine that you've got 100 pubs all within a mile radius. It's just not the case. You've got sort of clusters of five or six. Anyway, I would go into pub toilets and find remarks that are left. Sometimes it would be frustrating and I wouldn't find a lot. In the likes of Mayfair, there was just nothing. And I was shamefully disappointed. I was like, of course there's not, of course.
Well,
Shoreditch and, you know.
You didn't go to the right ones.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've done more than most people, but yeah. But anyway, so then I would take those messages, take them back to the studio, and yeah, I wanted to shine a light on this movement, this tradition. And so what we've got next to us is we've got two original paintings.
And they're text-based paintings, which are
of course
great, yeah. Because words are also lines. I'm looking at one that says, forgive.
Forgive yourself.
Forgive yourself. And that's profound.
Yeah, an interesting insight, that one. Hangs above my bed.
Yeah,
because I love it. I love the textual elements. I love the message. Again, this is the one thing that person decided to leave.
Yeah.
That they could have written anything.
Trans love is beautiful.
So powerful.
And again, you're talking about societal norms. That doesn't fit the stereotype of a British pub. And I think that's a great juxtaposition, if you like.
Yeah, for sure. And I totally remember the moment I saw both of these phrases.
Yeah.
And I just walked in and just went, you know, and it says something to you. Forgive yourself. You know, we've not all been perfect. Again, it's an invitation to converse. And, you know, you don't have to converse physically. You don't need to write something in return, but you can feel it. Yeah.
They're creating connection. It's beautiful that
it's
people want to connect.
Yeah.
And then here we have God.
God save the Queen is what someone first wrote.
Yeah.
So this is, I brought this along because this is the handwriting of the people that left it. So two people. Here, again, an invitation to converse.
Yeah, and collaborate.
God save the Queen. It's not my words.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
important to say that. My role is the observer. I need to deal with the things that I'm faced with.
So where karma's going with this is someone's gone in with the marker and switched it to...
God fuck the King.
Yeah, which is in real time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Possibly in real time.
And you know, that's the handwriting. I don't know, that calligraphy... No designer on the planet would design that.
Yeah, it's not Helvetica.
No, no. And
it's personal.
Such a striking image. I walked in just into that toilet and I was just like, geez. You know, ultimately that first walk was research. And I did that research project and I came away just like, this project has more than I thought. So yeah, I'm doing it. But what we also have here, crucially, is a mirror.
And it wouldn't be complete without a phallic symbol on something.
That wasn't my doing. So this Shit Show exhibition, as we've mentioned,
which was in Bethnal Green, which created a great stir, which is also marked by the fact that you didn't sell anything.
Yeah,
there were 63 doors in total, and that were doors that were original creations based on the research you did of the 250 pubs.
So 63 paintings.
Paintings, pardon me.
There was one door
from
and
that would be the sculpture.
Yeah. And so on the entrance to the exhibition, you were asked a question on the outside, and it said, "Who the fuck is Kamikaze?" And then the final piece of the exhibition was a cubicle, a toilet cubicle that you go in and you can leave an expression, but there's a mirror inside. So that was the moment that people sort of figured out Kamikaze is anyone kind of thing.
And this is key to the whole project. You're taking this outside of yourself. So if you don't get the Kamikaze concept, you're missing the point that this isn't about you. It's about everybody.
Yeah, it's about the crowd, including me. Yeah, so that mirror, ultimately, the cubicle was the thing I was most excited about. So, of course, I'm male. I can't go into female toilets. The cubicle was the first opportunity I had to capture an all-encompassing moment in London. So across genders, anything. So anybody could go into that cubicle and leave something. So this mirror, I wanted to bring it along because, to be honest, I know these show artistic merit, my paintings. There's a number of different disciplines and textures, and that's cool. You know, I've been blessed with a talent and a skill, but again, it's not about me. These do something. You know, the doors on the back of the sculpture, it doesn't have the textural elements that I was faced with. So I wanted to wholeheartedly reflect the movement, which will go on to the sound. You know, you're in a pub and you hear the noise going on. But with this, these are about me, but then you've got the mirror, which other people have activated. And I think that is the most exciting thing for me, because you've got this, again, it's not about me, so it's other people leaving their mark. The mark making shouldn't be about me.
And of course, a mirror is infinity, isn't it?
Yeah.
What influences you culturally and artistically, and who shaped who you are and how you approach your work?
The community I grew up in, to be honest. So I've lived all over the world, which I'm privileged to have done so. But just people, and it's not just the community I grew up in, just anywhere you go. When I travel, I like to not travel around too often. I like to stay in one place for an adequate amount of time.
Which is the difference than being a tourist.
Yeah. And I just really want to live like a local. After 3 weeks and you leave, you're just like, these people have taught me so much about life. So again, it goes back to that tangent of the everyday person and
opening your mind.
Yeah, I remember being in a taxi in Bali, and the taxi driver's just like, I have absolutely nothing. I've never seen a more smiley human on the planet. He's like, I have nothing. I have my wife, I have my son. And he's like, I have everything. I am happy. And he owned nothing. You know, his job as a taxi driver gave him everything. You know, he could eat, he could sleep, he blah, blah, blah. And just, you know, that's one little sentiment of, actually, it's not even a little sentiment, you know?
It's huge.
Yeah, we just sort of, we get lost in it all. So I guess different cultures. I started this sentence, you know, this paragraph off by saying, it's all about where I was from, but it's kind of a mixture of the two. I went away, as I consistently do through my work, and then coming back to my local community, I experienced it in a different way. And I think, again, it's the everyday person. It's not one person. It's a landscape of individuals. And
it's also on how you hear and how you look and how you listen and relate to people. What theories inspire you? And what's integral to your practice? What can't you live without?
To be honest, just art is in my veins. If I wake up any day, which I do, and I'm blessed to have this 24 hours, to not paint just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, it's the only thing that's ever made sense. I have a problem with the school system, for example. I mean,
the school system is a problem, let's be honest.
It is a problem, and it's a chunky one. You know, it's kind of a one suit fits all, everyone has to do this, but it's like, some of the things just aren't going to be geared up to this person. Let's let it be malleable.
It's a problem.
Let's let it shape someone. I mean, early on, all of my teachers, I've been blessed with the best teachers along the way. I dropped out of one place and they were just like, nah, not happening. You are the art kid. You're staying put. They shaped the whole course.
How lucky. That's lovely.
Yeah. Just absolutely blessed. So I feel so privileged that I had that, you know, because some people don't.
Well, it's interesting because it's like the cab driver. It doesn't matter what you have. You should learn to love the things you have that you're gifted with.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
That's kind of the context. It's not you being particularly blessed. It's that everybody has to notice and observe the blessings in their life. Obviously, life isn't fair in that way economically through everyone, but you're getting it. The only thing you do have control over is learning to love the life that you have.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's a special thing. It's a special thing. And I'm, yeah, I wasn't a ridiculously successful person early on, but just having those people that just nurtured me and nurtured my talent, and they shaped me into the direction I should be going inevitably.
Beautiful.
Like anyone in science that has that, I just hope that they have a similar opportunity to be looked after and driven down that direction. Yeah, anyway, we've ended up down the school route, but means a lot to me.
No, it's really important. I mean, I listened a lot to Rick Rubin's Tetragrammaton.
Yeah.
And Will, my producer, is probably bored hearing me talk about it. But and he knows how to nurture talent, and nurturing talent is... It's a special skill. Skill set. You have to understand it, firstly, and understand that brain speaks and thinks differently. That's why your problem with the school system isn't your problem. It's that the school system is a problem because you're going to be different.
Yeah.
What artists do you like? Because, of course, the anonymity thing brings me right to Banksy, but that's not really who you are. You're different than that. The anonymity thing is conceptual in your practice because you want you to be a vehicle for everyone. So there's a collective unconscious that you're tapping into. Yeah, so I'm trying to figure it out as we go along, which I'm thinking you're trying to figure it out as you go along too, because you didn't sell any of your work at the first show. And that's a statement.
We can come on to that. I mean, I'm interested, and I'm not going to know the answers to the questions, but I'm interested in anyone who's living authentically and any artist who's genuinely being themselves throughout the mode of practice. I'm interested in them for sure, you know.
How do you judge that someone's authentic? What is the criteria for
you're
authenticity?
You're better off not looking at the work. You're better off watching an interview by that person, you know, and having a conversation or just reading the words they write. Look, so many people are blessed with the opportunity to be able to, or the talent to be able to make a successful image. And, you know, these days with social media, it's a straightforward process to get it out there in the world. And we're lucky, you know, back in the day, the likes of Warhol or whatever, they didn't have that. So it's a very different scene to navigate. I buy art. I like to feed the thing that's given me so much. You know, I like to... So I go through, you know, if I'm really interested in an image, I don't just buy it. It's not a commodity for me. If I do buy it, my best opportunity was getting an opportunity to have a conversation with that person and really getting to know that, you know, that individual. And thankfully, I've been consistently getting it pretty bang on. I had a conversation with an artist yesterday who lives in Birmingham. He's from the US, an incredible artist. His work doesn't sell for a lot of money, and it's just some of the most incredible art I've ever seen in my life. And talking to him, I'm just like, you are the nuts, mate. Like, the price of a piece doesn't measure up necessarily with the art.
You're so right. Good art can be not expensive, and bad art can be very expensive. It's
absolutely
not. There's no. It's absolutely not at all to do with how great the work is.
And psychology comes into it. And you know, of course, this thing is a psychological study, I feel, with Kamikaze. But, you know, let's say you've got a pair of trainers. You see two pairs of trainers and you love one of them. You don't like the other. One of them's £10, one of them's £100. The one you like, when they release the prices, happens to be the tenner. The other one's £100. Something happens and you immediately attribute quality to the more expensive one. which isn't necessarily, you know, fact.
There's too much marketing going on.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of marketing going on, and that has nothing to do with authenticity.
Yeah.
So there's a few questions, and we're running out of time, unfortunately, that I want to ask you about. I want to ask you about releasing the work onto the market, and if you want to do that, I want to know what's next. I want to hear about some of the responses you've had from people.
Yeah, I've never had so much demand for trying to buy some works. And, you know, it'd be very easy to make a number of sales right now. But thankfully, my practice as a painter, I'm, you know, I've got a sustainable career that is a blessing. But the response has been unbelievable. People have heard the music, you know, recorded at Abbey Road Studios, and they've instantly connected with the art. They've ended up going over there and viewing the works. And
well, and the videos were great.
And the videos, of course.
The short films, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a wit and a wisdom and a creativity that's sort of summed up quite concisely in the videos, and the music makes them absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, and I'll touch on the music. It was kind of the only – I was just sitting there and, you know, I meditate on stuff as I've spoken, and I was just like, the only thing that we're missing is the acoustic of the movement. You know, when you're in a pub toilet, you can hear loud music or whatever, and just – I wanted to explore that too. So the first show was all about wholeheartedly reflecting this thing, and we ended up down that rabbit hole. But in terms of music, art being released to the public, it's kind of – I don't know. I'm not seeing it as a commodity. It's not something you can just come and throw money at. I was offered yesterday £150,000 for this door sculpture, which I instantly said no to. I didn't even consider that. And I know I'm in a privileged position to be able to say, nah.
Because you smelled something wrong. Something was wrong too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And anything about this thing, it has to be not about me making gain. It has to be about furthering the movement. So, you know, I'm willing to accept some sales at some point when I enter the market, but it's all going to be shaped. It's all going to be used in a particular way.
So what's the next step to keep this a collective experience?
The next concept is the most fascinating one that I've had to date. And, yeah, I can't go too much, but it includes and features public engagement and activation. I'm very sure now, you know, I've tested the waters with this thing, and I think that's the thing that people are going to really, it's going to resonate.
If you could, as Karmakazi, if there was one piece of art that you could have that would be reflective of what Karmakazi is authentically about, what would be the closest thing that's not a piece of your art that would work? And money can't be the deciding factor, but of course I know with you it never would be.
Well, to be honest, the reason I did the original walk, my aim was to find doors that I loved, that I felt really reflected the movement, and I was going to obtain those doors from the landlords, and I was going to replace all of their doors in their toilets just so I could get that one door. And that would be it, you know? But ultimately, it wasn't possible. There wasn't one door that was perfect. There was 63 that had great content on them. So what I wanted to do was I ended up putting the cubicle in my show. And then we got that opportunity to get that really authentic moment of London. So I've got it.
Yeah.
You know, I've already got it.
But you're doing Paris next.
I'm doing Paris next as a walk. I have got some crazy opportunities on the horizon. I've got, there's a New York show on the horizon. There's a Berlin exhibition on the horizon.
We'd like to come on the road with you.
Yeah, well, come along.
Karmakazi, thank you so much. Can you just say what your website is? So if anyone wants to have a look at these pieces and be moved by them as much as I have been.
Yeah, karmakazi.com. You won't see any paintings on there because I'm lazy and I haven't got them on there yet. But just Google it, Karmakazi.
And you can see the films.
You can see the films, yeah. So two short films. They're only 12 minutes long, so you've got plenty of time By a double BAFTA winning documentary maker, Lee Phillips. But also, yeah, what's next is a conceptual exhibition, which for me, the concept is as strong as it gets. So wherever it is, there's a number of things on the table. But yeah, if you can be there.
You've been listening to Maeve Doyle's Private View. This podcast is produced by Will Fitzpatrick at Soho Radio. The music is by Khurshid Homi. Thank you for listening.